Happy Friday, Tucson. We made it. It is Friday. Welcome to the Friday edition of the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice, where every day we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, debate, and discuss the issues and themes that we need to talk about to get there. And that is certainly what we are doing today. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. And as always, your trust and local listening is so valuable to the news and talk that we do. And we think when we do that right, it's a great partnership. So thank you for listening today. Thank you for listening every day and throughout the week. And thank you for getting us through to the weekend. But we're not quite there yet. And that's a good thing because we have a really great show for you today. Here in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to kick off with a deep dive with Leah Marquez Peterson from the Marquez Peterson Group on the United States, Mexico, Canada Agreement, USMCA, also sometimes called NAFTA 2.0. We touched on it briefly 5-6 weeks ago when we were on the air together, but it has things have progressed, and maybe by progressed, maybe not as fast or not as much as we would like. So I wanted to get an update from Leah on the USMCA agreement, where it's at, and what it means for Southern Arizona, whether it moves through Congress finally or not. And of course, Leah comes from also the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce perspective on these issues as a national board member. And so we're going to kick off the 10 o'clock hour talking about that. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Louis Dumas and Ashley LaRussa will come in to talk about Black Renaissance, a May series showcasing arts from the Black community in Arizona, just in May. So it's a timely conversation. And the African-American community in Tucson is small but has an amazing history. And it's a history that I found isn't talked about. The impact of the African-American community in Tucson, you wouldn't think of it, but it's there. It's pretty incredible. And there are hints of it all over the place. So we're gonna talk about that. But it is the 10 o'clock hour, and so our focus for now is my conversation with Leah Marquez Peterson. Leah, thank you for coming in on a Friday. You always either come in on a Monday to kick us off or a Friday to take us out, and both ends of the week are really appreciated.
Yeah,
so thank
you. Problem. Thank you for having me, Zach. And I know I was here, I guess it was 4 or 5 weeks ago, to talk about this same topic as well as kind of what we were doing at the United States
right.
Hispanic Chamber. I formerly served as the president of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber for over 9 years.
Yes.
I was very honored to be selected to serve at the national level on the United States Hispanic Chamber Board, and I actually co-chair government relations. So we're pretty involved in the
right.
whole national discussion around the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and where it's going and kind of where it's not going.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, there are a lot of discussions happening at the state level as well as at the national level that I've attended in the last month. And we still continue to advocate for its ratification.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons that I definitely wanted to have a specific conversation on this is because we were talking about more of the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce issues in Southern Arizona that are worth advocating for, and Hispanic-owned businesses and so on and so forth. We touched lightly on USMCA, often talked about in terms of NAFTA 2.0
right.
is kind of its
mm-hmm.
little moniker to make the other acronym make a little more sense, but we didn't do a full conversation on it, so I thought it'd be worth doing that. Maybe to start, could you just explain some major policy differences between NAFTA and USMCA? Jared Kushner on the president's staff was in charge of renegotiating NAFTA, and it was a 3-month renegotiation, which was pretty incredible in terms of the speed of it, if I understand correctly. It's since stalled then, but that was a project at one of the highest levels. It was one of President Trump's campaign promises when he was on the campaign trail, was to adjust and adapt NAFTA. So what are some of the main policy differences between NAFTA 1.0 and NAFTA 2.0?
Yeah, and I guess I'll start with why was there a need for a renegotiation? And NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, Agreement is our agreement between Mexico, Canada, and the United States. And it had been written some 25 years ago. And there are probably many listening right now that perhaps remember as that unfolded and we really saw a change in trade and industrial relations between our three countries. But 25 years ago, we were doing business in a very different manner, right? The internet was not as prevalent. Different types of business we were doing cross-border were different. So they needed to touch on how we were going to do trade in the future in North America. And so that's where the USMCA was born. And there were so many conversations, I'd say, over the last year and a half with the real culmination in the last 3 months in terms of how they negotiated it. It has been so analyzed and discussed in terms of what was needed next. I'll tell you some of the major differences. Yeah. And I also wanted to localize this because a lot of people think, you know, gosh, this is something Congress is debating. Well, how does it impact me and why do I care? But I'll tell you, in Arizona, the U.S. Census indicates that we do over $20 billion in Arizona with Mexico and Canada. I mean, it is a huge economic impact to our state. And there was a recent report done by the North American Research Partnership and the Cross-Border Group. And we have an estimated 228,000 net jobs in Arizona that resulted in trade with Canada and Mexico in 2017. So whether you're listening and you actually do business directly in exporting or importing, just know that so many industries are impacted by trade between Mexico and Canada, specifically here in Arizona. So it's vitally important that we still have our agreement in place. Now, kind of to your question, what's the difference? What you see first and foremost is a new chapter for small and medium-sized enterprises in the USMCA. Small business really wasn't mentioned in the original NAFTA. And as someone who ran the local Hispanic chamber, we represented some 1,800 different businesses, a majority of them small business, I'd say 50 employees or fewer. And this is very important to small business, which is a majority of Arizona. But this has a new chapter in it. It actually created a shipment level that if it was less than $2,500, there is a benefit of reduced paperwork. That's less regulation. You've heard Governor Ducey talk about it, and certainly the Trump administration. That's a great benefit to the USMCA. You also realize that there's a whole new chapter on digital trade. 25 years ago, again, if the internet was not very prevalent, you didn't see the e-commerce you see today. So USMCA is addressing digital trade between our three countries and supporting internet-enabled small businesses and e-commerce exporting and so on. It's also, there's always been an attention on small business doing procurement, which means selling to the government. So again, there's a whole chapter and talk about government procurement and the role of small business in the three countries, and even the talk of a creation of a portal that you could, as a small business, find procurement opportunities in the USMCA. Intellectual property, that wasn't really addressed as thoroughly in NAFTA. And I know we hear a lot about that in relation to trade. So having a intellectual property area, IP rights and so on, and protection of our rights, that's an important part of the USMCA. And maybe some of this is a little wonky to talk about on the radio, but just know that every one of these chapters was analyzed and negotiated very closely by industry and interested parties in all three of the countries. There's also support for increasing the number of small businesses that are engaged in cross-border trade. You know, a couple of years ago, if you'd come to the Tucson Hispanic Chamber, we would have sent you to the Arizona Commerce Authority, the U.S. Department of Commerce. They both have programs in helping small businesses export. But there's a renewed emphasis on kind of removing the unnecessary burden of how a small business might open a foreign office, or is there a regulated need to have a foreign office in another country? I mean, so there's so many nuanced changes in this. And again, it's one of the most advanced and technologically advanced agreements, the USMCA. Mm. And it's the reason our United States Hispanic Chamber has come out in support. We just recently sent another press release saying that, as a reminder to U.S. Congress, that we need to act, we need to move forward and ratify the USMCA. And this has to be done at the congressional level in all three countries. And the U.S., their part in ensuring that the USMCA is passed and is executed is vitally important. So mm-hmm. our point in our letter and our press release and the media that's happening across the nation is this is something that each of our 250 Hispanic chambers across the country need to bring up to our local congresspeople and say, please don't forget the impact, not just on Arizona as a border state, but Michigan, Idaho, I mean, whatever state our Hispanic chamber's from.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've been shocked as I've looked at, you know, who's been talking about it. There's bipartisan support, especially along along the border states. It was very interesting to listen to this conversation play out pre-2016. Everything you've mentioned makes a lot of sense to me. And these are things that I wasn't aware of specifically about USMCA before getting to talk to you just now. These things make sense to me. But when it was talked about, it really felt like there was a lot of shock value to NAFTA, and we have to either like scrap it or renew it, there was a lot of shock value to it. For those who maybe liked NAFTA as it was, what were some of the forces that were saying, it's fine the way it is, let's keep it the way it is? Does that question make
sense? That's an interesting way. I didn't hear in rooms I was in that it was fine as it was. I think there was an understanding that it absolutely needed to be updated, but there was fear. Because with any kind of massive agreement like this, the politics involved could really derail this. And so when President Trump announced that we were ending NAFTA as it was and we were going to depend on the ratification of the USMCA, a lot of those in industry, small businesses that do trade, were fearful that this would just get caught up in the politics. And unfortunately, that's kind of the point we're at right now.
I was going to say.
So it has bipartisan support. This is not just chambers that are supporting it. I serve on the Arizona District Export Council, which is appointed by the U.S. Department of Commerce. They're having sessions with our congressional leaders here in Arizona. I think DECs, as they're called, are having those throughout the nation. We're really trying to elevate the conversation on what exporting means to each of our states so that it's a higher priority. Unfortunately, though, with the politics in place, we need to ensure that we have bipartisan support and that this moves forward.
Right. Well, you mentioned a word a minute ago, wonky. To anyone listening, and by the way, if you just joined us, you're involved in my conversation with Leah Marquez Peterson, who serves on the national board, the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, addressing especially government and public policy issues at a national level. We're talking about the USMCA agreement, the new NAFTA, which the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce supports, and we wanted to go wonky into it. So if you're listening, we're owning that. I'm owning that this hour. That I think what my last question reflected is that the national, and this is not anti-media at all, what you see on the news, what you see in newspapers is so often this tiny sliver of a reaction or a counter-reaction to an item like the new NAFTA. When you get into the weeds, it starts to make a little bit more sense. And I just don't feel like we ever get that far in these conversations.
It's very sensationalized.
It's very sensationalized. So honestly, if you are listening, I've asked for Leah to be a little bit wonky on this so we can really dig in, because I don't think we have that full conversation. So thank you for...
And I'll mention, just a few weeks ago, I was invited to the White House to attend a discussion on the USMCA. I went on behalf of the United States Hispanic Chamber, but it was Latino leaders from across the country, kind of around Cinco de Mayo time, where we came in and heard from the Mexican ambassador to the U.S., Martha Barcena, who was actually the first female in that position too, which was exciting. But hearing from Mexican leadership as well as Canadian leadership, how important this is. So this is a conversation occurring not just certainly at the local level, but at the national level, and really a plea for bipartisan support to acknowledge how important trade is to all size businesses in every state across the nation.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah, I forgot that happened between our last interview and this interview. Oh, well, that feels like a good time to maybe go visit some sponsors and come back, because as you hinted at, there was a concern that this would get caught up in politics. And to some level, not just the U.S., by the way, there's some changes happening in Canada. There's not so recent, but sort of recent changes in Mexico's leadership. There's a lot of changes in power politically in all three countries. And again, Jared Kushner moved this through in 3 months. I think a lot of people were amazed how fast that happened. And then it just kind of is stalling. So we're going to talk with Leah Marquez Peterson after the break on what is the holdup? Some questions I've heard about the USMCA that Leo might have answers for, and where do we go from here and how it matters to Southern Arizona. We'll cover all of that when we come back from the break. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Come on back after the break. Tucson, welcome back. You are listening to 1030 The Voice. Welcome back to the show where we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And we're talking about a rather big topic that has a potential for a huge impact either way on Tucson and Southern Arizona, the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, also known as NAFTA 2.0 informally. And I'm in studio with Leah Marquez-Peterson, who serves the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce as at the national level as a board member focusing on government relations and public policy. And I wanted to have Leah come in today to talk about and get into the weeds a little bit, in fact, on the differences between NAFTA 1.0 and 2.0, and then also an update really on the status. If you're just joining us, USMCA is an update to NAFTA in many ways. I'll just name a few. You can go back and listen to the podcast if you missed the first segment, but there are changes based on the development of the internet that make government procurement easier for small and mid-sized businesses. Those are just a couple of some of the main differences that really take it from the 90s to the 2010s, if you will, and a lot of things have changed. And it was interesting to hear from Leah that the business community and even the public policy committee, if you will, the political sphere on both sides of the aisle, have seen and seen for a while the need for NAFTA to be updated to the 21st century. So from a policy standpoint, there's a lot of bipartisan support, but it's getting caught up in politics, and that's where we're going to go next. Again, Leah, this was negotiations took about 3 months, which is kind of light year speed in the political realm. But then it stalled once it hit Congress. Canada is about to have some leadership changeover. Mexico is still processing their election. It was about a year and a half ago at this point.
Yeah.
So it's not recent, but it is new. So what is the holdup? It's been negotiated but not ratified. What's the holdup?
So from my perspective, I mean, it's the how politicized this has become. I mean, you've heard President Trump, even during his campaign season in 2016 and more recently, talk about an America First mentality, really pushing hard on the importance of a new updated NAFTA. And I think from a political perspective, that perhaps the Democrats don't want to see him have a win. So we're really trying to take the conversation out of that and talk about how it needs to be a win for Arizona, in our case, win for trade in our economy and so on, and try and remove some of the politics. It's difficult, though. I mean, any bill or any legislation, especially this large, that has such an impact across the nation, has so many moving parts. Related to the USMCA, the US-Mexico-Canada Agreement, you've had the automotive manufacturers weigh in. This greatly impacts agriculture, computers and electronic equipment. In fact, I pulled what are the top Arizona exports to Canada and Mexico. And we here in our state export more than $2 billion of just computer and electronic products and electrical equipment, and minerals are over $1 billion, transportation equipment, almost $1 billion. I mean, so many industries are impacted by this. So we need to look beyond the politics and push our Congress people to act.
Absolutely. So let me make sure I get the timeline just clear. So at first, and maybe it was a negotiation tactic, at first President Trump was just going to pull out of NAFTA immediately. And then some other forces said, well, let's keep it in place until we negotiate and ratify a new agreement. So we're technically still a part of NAFTA until the USMCA
is ratified.
Now, Trump has warned that if USMCA is not ratified, he's going to go back to his original plan, completely pull out of NAFTA. And in the meantime of all this, speaking of politics, all three countries have been kind of playing a tariff game of slapping tariffs on different things. And so beyond just the individual politics of each country, there's kind of this international trade stuff happening as well. From either your perspective, or I don't know if the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, how they're looking at following this along, it feels kind of shaky. What are some of the maybe slower, less kind of raucous voices trying to call for?
I mean, I think what you've heard from President Trump is a long time theme of America First. He was going to take a look at various trade agreements, whether it was by product or industry, in particular tariffs, and say, this is not fair to American industry, or it's not putting America first. We're going to renegotiate this. You've certainly seen that from China in the last month, and tariffs that have been proposed and what that impact will be on different products, because we're so dependent on so many Chinese products. We also saw that unfold recently in the tomato trade war, in terms of letting a suspension agreement with tomatoes expire. And President Trump allowed that, and that's going to have a dramatic impact on tariffs on just tomatoes alone. And there's a whole story to that we can get mm-hmm. into. But I think that the theme of America First, I think, resonates with Americans throughout the nation. They think that absolutely we want to do what's best for our country. But I think we also need to have a clear understanding of how dependent we are as industries and how it impacts jobs. Whether you're in that industry or not, but tourism and trade in different capacities in each of our cities and our states. Mm-hmm. That's why I wanted to start this with, if I'm in Arizona, why do I care?
Right.
And you care because more than 228,000 jobs mm-hmm. in Arizona are related to trade with Canada and Mexico. So this is something that impacts probably all of our families or a family you know.
Absolutely. And that's a percentage of an estimated 5 million jobs around the country that depend on exports to Mexico.
Right.
That would be at risk if NAFTA is scrapped or pulled out of. Speaking of America First, one of the concerns that I've read about, and I don't know if this number backs up, but there are concerns that benefits to workers wouldn't really kick in until a few years into the agreement. Have you heard about that? And do you know what dynamics are at play? And
yeah, so there was a lot of concern as the USMCA was being negotiated about labor relations, labor conditions in Mexico in particular. We know many US and other manufacturers have gone to Mexico to have different byproducts made or pieces of what I think I've heard the term that an automobile crosses the borders at 7 times before it's complete mm-hmm. with different component parts being built or
wow.
or put together in Mexico. So really interesting, but there is concern with labor conditions. You've seen since President López Obrador has taken office in Mexico that he has been leading on labor reform. So you've got an increase in wages occurring there. You've got a lot of changes in standards and conditions. And I think that's very positive. But it still plays to how important USMCA is and why that's moved forward in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're off to a great direction in terms of what this can mean to our state and to our nation. And again, it's just important that we don't lose sight of it. When I'm in rooms, and of course I'm probably in pro-business, pro-trade rooms most of the time, I think we take it for granted that, oh, absolutely, this makes complete sense. Of course Congress is going to ratify this. It's a done deal. We negotiated it. And no, I mean, I've been in D.C. probably once a month in the last 6 months, and it's not always top of mind. We need to continue to bring it up. We need our congressional leaders to understand who in their district is impacted by trade with Mexico and Canada so that it's kept top of mind. If we don't do this during this session and we move closer to the presidential election, it's going to be even harder to get any kind of USMCA ratified.
Right. And is that the window that people talk about? It's kind of closing. What do they mean by that? At what point would this just die, if that makes sense?
I think if it weren't to be ratified in the next several months, I don't think it would die because our economy is entirely dependent on it. It would just mean we'd have to pick it up again and hopefully not start over, but move forward with continued conversations. And who knows what kind of chaos that would create in the industry and different industries in the meantime. You've got a lot of different industries and companies certainly advocating how important this is, and especially the automotive industry and some of these key industry computers and electronics. We talked about agricultural products, chemicals, mining, that need to know that the playbook is in terms of doing business. Business doesn't thrive on uncertainty, right? So we need to know what the rules are and the guidelines and the tariffs and the cost of export and import now and not wait further, because it could impact future development or expansion.
Right. You hinted at something that was another issue I wanted to cover while you were here, and that is there was some labor reform policy that we wanted to see Mexico change or pass before getting behind some of the economic trade and economic development things that the USMCA would assist with. Can you speak to that in a little bit more detail?
Yeah, so I do know that wages increased along our border regions, conditions within a lot of the manufacturing facilities. So a number of labor reforms. I don't have all the particular specifics Sure. here with me, but I think people were very encouraged to see the Mexican president and his administration move forward on that. I mentioned earlier I was at the White House recently in a discussion with the USMCA, and the Mexican ambassador to the U.S., Martha Barcena, also spoke about labor reforms. So I think that was a missing discussion, perhaps, a missing piece of this. And so very appreciative of the Mexican federal government moving forward.
Absolutely. We talked about maybe talking about tomatoes.
Yeah, I brought some data with me on tomatoes. If people are worried about their salsa, they might be listening right now.
It's important.
It is. I mean, you're surprised how much tomatoes are. So what is happening right now is that the U.S. Department of Commerce has announced a 17.56% tariff on tomatoes coming from Mexico. Why? Because we had a 23-year-old deal called the Tomato Suspension Agreement that has expired. Based on lobbying and advocacy from American growers of tomatoes, predominantly Florida. Where it gets complicated, because you think that's still the America First theme that we've been talking about, is that in Arizona, we're very dependent on produce distribution from Mexican growers coming up through Nogales. Huge impact. You've heard quite an outcry from our Fresh Produce Association that's based in Nogales, Arizona, because it impacts many, many jobs that are in Arizona as well as throughout the United States. I found a stat online, as I figured you were going to ask me about tomatoes, that agricultural economists at ASU estimate that the hikes will be 40 to 80% on tomatoes depending on the season and the type of tomato. So you might think, okay, just tomatoes, who cares? But no, tomatoes are in, you know, think of Italian food and salsa and, you know, on your salads and so on. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see dramatic increases. And beyond that, just the number of jobs that are impacted in terms of warehousing and distribution if the amount of tomatoes starts dropping dramatically from Mexico into Arizona. Why did Florida kind of speak up? You saw Mexican growers of tomatoes growing dramatically in their market share. And Florida was kind of accusing Mexico at the time of kind of flooding our nation with underpriced tomatoes. That's why it was kind of called the tomato war, if you mm-hmm. followed it in the news. But I also saw a quote from distribution companies in Texas, which is some of our largest ports in the nation, that they think importers will be paying $1,000 to $3,000 more per truckload of tomatoes coming up from Mexico into the U.S. So how much more is a tomato? Depends on season, depends mm-hmm. on what kind of tomato it is. But again, they're expecting 40 to 80% increase because of the suspension. So it depends kind of what side of the mm-hmm. argument you're coming from. Supporting American growers, you know, absolutely the direction President Trump has gone, but also from an Arizona and probably Texas perspective, this could hurt.
Right. This conversation made me think of something, and this is probably how we'll end up closing, is we've taken for granted, I think, what NAFTA has brought in the first place. It's outdated, it needs updated, it needs 21st century eyes. I just made that word up, but it's Friday, so we can do that.
right.
But we take for granted some of the incredible growth, especially in our borderlands, that came from NAFTA being passed in the first place. We've talked about some of the policy differences between the two, but could you share a few words on what NAFTA brought in the first place back in, was it 94, 96?
It's only about 25 years ago.
Yeah, 25 years ago, kind of what that has brought to the United States, this better trade between Mexico and Canada.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Arizona is now doing some $17 to $20 billion a year in trade, I mean, that incredible growth has occurred because of NAFTA. As the former president of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber, I used to take vans and buses of state legislators and different leaders, specifically even from the Phoenix area to Nogales, Sonora, to see the maquilas, or the manufacturing facilities. And what people are often shocked to hear is there are more than 100 maquiladoras, or big manufacturing facilities, in Nogales, Sonora alone. They think of Nogales, perhaps you grew up here and you used to go down there for trinket shopping or food or to buy booze or whatever it might be. But there's a huge manufacturing community in Nogales, Sonora that is buying product from Arizona. I went to one with a group of Republican state legislators where I think it was called Belkin, where they would buy copper from up in the Globe, Miami area, transport it by train down to Nogales, Sonora, and make the wiring that's used in telecommunications and then ship it back. I mean, so we're so linked between our two countries. And I think all of that is really due to NAFTA and the fact that we had no tariffs or low tariffs or lower regulation because we were within this NAFTA agreement. That's why there's so much fear that USMCA is not ratified. President Trump says we're going to pull the plug and you know, force folks to move forward on this. That would just be devastating for so many industries. Again, computers, electronics, mining, agriculture, and so on, to have that uncertainty. So I think NAFTA's had great impact, and I think USMCA will take it that next step and be a really better situation for our country.
Wonderful. If someone listening wants to maybe do a little bit of homework, maybe on their own, and maybe look at some of the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce position statements or read up on USMCA, some of the particulars, are there any resources that you have found particularly helpful or that you would refer folks to as this process continues?
I think you can certainly learn more about the U.S. Hispanic Chamber at ushcc.com. If you are on Twitter and you put in hashtag USMCA, you'll see hundreds of articles that folks have put out in terms of support or concern they have. I try every time that I speak about the USMCA to hashtag USMCA so that I'm part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. There are groups and business organizations throughout the states along the U.S. border as well as the Mexican border that are having lots of conversations on this. So I think it's easily found on the internet in terms of different perspectives. But the U.S. Hispanic Chamber has a press release. It talks a lot to these details, and you can find that on our website.
Wonderful. And also, I'll try to post as well the article that I was reading that I was asking you about before about some of the labor laws that were...
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, because I know that there's concern that that with more globalized trade come other challenges that just, you know, sometimes the market doesn't always behave the way that it should.
Yeah.
And making sure that more globalized trade doesn't have negative human impact is important. And so I think it's important to see that there was a requirement for labor law adjustments before a continuation of this. Was that kind of what was on the mind of the Hispanic Chamber?
That's why in that press release, not only did we push for the ratification, but we also applauded the Mexican government for moving forward on labor reform. And I wrote a op-ed or a blog entry right after my last trip to D.C., which was published in the Arizona Capital Times. So that's also using a lot of the facts that I mentioned today that people are welcome to find and read.
Oh, great. Do you remember what the title was that you wrote
for people that it's time for bipartisan support of the USMCA.
Okay.
That was the name of it. It's also on my own blog, which is on my website at MarquezPetersonGroup.com.
Great. Well, Leah, thank you for closing us out on a Friday. Thanks for doing a little bit of a deeper dive on the USMCA. Always appreciate the kind of the facts and figures that you bring in to back that up. And we'll have to do this again soon.
Yeah. Thanks again for the invitation. Appreciate
it. Wonderful. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Yeah. Any special plans?
No, just spending time with family.
Sounds good. I think that for busy people, that's a special plan.
Yeah. Not always time to do that. So it's very important.
I am feeling that just as well. Wonderful. Well, thank you again. Tucson, we just wrapped up a deep dive conversation into the particulars of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement as it compares to NAFTA 1.0. If you missed any of that interview, we started at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. If you just jumped in or missed any of it and you want to go back and listen to our full conversation, give it about 24 hours, and you can go to kvoy.com www.tucsonmag.org/podcast and download and listen to it. My full conversation with Leah Marquez Peterson, again, the principal of the Marquez Peterson Group, and then also serving on the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce board at the national level, focusing on government relations and the public policy side of things. So when we come back from the break, we will continue talking to Tucson. We'll connect some more dots and we'll get ready for Ashley LaRussa and Louis Dumas to come in to talk about Black Renaissance, a showcase of artists and Black artists from Arizona and their legacy and impact here in Tucson. It'll be a good conversation. We are finishing strong here on the Creative City Show today, 10:30 The Voice. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to the show here on this Friday edition, where daily we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, debate, and discuss the themes that will get us there. And we talked about a very complex, a very intertwined, a very important topic to Southern Arizona and nationally in the first part of this hour with Leah Marquez Peterson, the principal of the Marquez Peterson Group. And for this conversation, especially a perspective from the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, she's a board member at the national level, talking about the USMCA, the United States-Mexico Candidate Agreement, also known as NAFTA 2.0, and the importance of getting that passed. And one of my takeaways is there is a lot of complex issues around the border and impacts of the last 25 years. But what I hear out and about is concern that, and again, it could be some level of negotiation. It's often hard to tell at the national presidential level. But the conversation around the USMCA, again, just to review, if you jumped in late, was driven by a campaign promise of President Trump's when he was on the campaign trail that NAFTA was not in line with his America First agenda. And he initially threatened to pull out of it completely without a replacement. And then the conversation moved to, well, let's figure out an update and an adaptation of it. Jared Kushner was the White House lead on developing in a very short period of time a new version of NAFTA called the USMCA. It was negotiated and it is a document, but it has yet to be ratified. And why I had Leah come in today is because it's kind of been sitting on the desk for a while, caught up in both a lot of politics at the different national levels, both Canada, Mexico, and the United States are having political issues one way or another that are getting in the way of the ratification. It's certainly getting held up in our Congress. And the president has said that if USMCA is not ratified by Congress, that he is going to pull the U.S. out of NAFTA as he promised. So the concern is that there will be many jobs both in Arizona and Southern Arizona and around the country that will be impacted if the U.S. is not a part of a trade agreement with Mexico and Canada. As we talked about on the show before, again, brought this up in the first segment, but just recapping it for anyone who's jumped into the conversation, the Mexico just surpassed, I believe it's Canada, for the number one trade partner of not only Arizona, which has been true for a while, but the United States as a whole, based on some trade numbers back in January and February. And there's something like, what is the number I had? Let me pull it back up. It's something I think 5 million jobs around the country come directly from trade relationship with Mexico. So we're not talking about a small aspect of our economy. NAFTA brought on a lot of trade and economic development and impact with Canada and Mexico through that. And I believe it's 1994 is when it was passed. So we're coming up on, I think, 25 years even. If it's 94, it'd be 25 years even. So important conversation. Again, if you missed that, go to kvoi.com/podcasts. To catch that. Give it about 24 hours and Bob or Ray will have it up there and you can go and check it out. That kind of takes us to a pivot to my second hour. I am really excited to, at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, have Louie and Ashley on from Black Renaissance to talk about African American artistry and creativity in Arizona. And my first how do I say it? I had a very interesting conversation that enlightened me and kind of opened my eyes up about a year ago when I had Debbie Chess Mabee on the show from the Dunbar School to talk about Tucson's Black community in Tucson. And I didn't know this, but I'll use this to kind of cue up the conversation. The Dunbar School was Tucson's only segregated school for more than 30 years. It was desegregated in 1951 with a name change. It was closed for good in 1978 and has since been reopened by the work of the Dunbar Coalition. And it was just interesting to have an interview with her. Again, this was about a year ago when the Creative City Show was on the weekend. But there's been an African American community in Tucson and in Tucson's history for a while that just doesn't get communicated about. My guest back then, Debbie Chess Mabee, was a Chicago transplant 7 years ago and began to work with the university. She was the executive director of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, and just saw the history of that community here in Tucson and really ran with it. It's just a community of Tucson that honestly I don't hear a lot about or get to talk a lot about. My friends Louie and Ashley and many, many more are a part of really spotlighting this community in Tucson, and I'm excited to get to talk about it. We'll get into more details at the top of the hour. There is a May series called Black Renaissance. It's happening really just down the street from here. And it is every Saturday in May from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock at Hotel McCoy. And its focus is celebrating Black artists in Arizona. And that's spoken word. That's other forms of music and presentation and everything like that. So that's going to be a good conversation at the top of the hour. So stay tuned for that. And in the vein of connecting the dots in Tucson here, as we look at the shows that we've had this week, where we go back and look at how does everything tie in together. Excited to share that one of the what if topics from one of the past weeks was a large scale internship project or program in Tucson, and I started my day having a conversation around how do we get that going in Tucson, and the themes we talk about on this program for some odd reason or another get talked about in other parts of the community, maybe because it's radio and it's a community conversation, right, Bob? But I wanted to, as we pivot to our 11 o'clock hour, just remind you, if you've come in and out of this week with us, we had the Greater Vail Area Metro Chamber of Commerce on the show on Monday. So if you are out in Vail or you have a business in Vail, check out Monday's episode with the business development executive Jeff Loxton. We got to talk to two really great entrepreneurs, Emil Tremblay and Dimitri Simonton. Dimitri's from Sierra Vista. Emil's right here in Tucson, about some of the technology That they're developing. We hit on a hot topic on Wednesday with Shelley Watson from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council about the Pima County preschool education investment program, looking at early childhood education. And then we finished that with Susan Kalita on Wednesday's show, talking about what is on the mind of graduates coming out of the University of Arizona. Yesterday's show, we featured kind of an up-and-coming young professional in the city related to a new job position, John Winchester, the new executive director for the YMCA. Was in, and then we talked about the summer nights, the market that's going on over at the Mercado San Agustin and the Annex, specifically over on the west side of Tucson. And we kind of had a summer theme. What do you do in Tucson in summer? An encouragement to enjoy your city. So I want to encourage you to check out the full last weeks of shows here as we wrap up the show this week of all the themes that we went ahead and talked about. And as always, as we often do, we had a talent attraction retention conversation as well on the show. I'm getting those weekend feels. Bob, any weekend plans? I know we're kind of jumping the gun a little bit, but anything you're up to this weekend?
You know, I don't think I'm going to do anything. We don't have anything slated, and I don't think I want to add anything to that.
That's a great plan.
Yeah.
I like those plans.
Just us in the house and get outside.
I asked our last guest, I asked Lee, I said, do you have any weekend plans just with family? And I said, you know, for busy people, that's a plan.
Perfect. I know.
That's certainly a plan that I'm hoping to have this weekend. I'm actually looking forward to how my day tomorrow is going to start. I'm going to get to, I think, take my little girl and hang out, but an intergenerational conversation around political discourse, how we have...
Is this what your three-year-old you're having?
Well, she's not going to be a part of the conversation. She's a little too on the younger
side of the generation.
I mean, she's sharp, but not that sharp. Not yet.
Wow.
Although watching politics, I feel like toddlers have a head start in politics. I often feel like I'm watching the same dynamics at play.
Behaviorally speaking, yes.
She colored on the walls and threw a tantrum, and it was like I was reading the news or something. But a conversation on how we have better political discourse in the country, and getting millennials, boomers, and Gen X together in a room over breakfast for a couple of hours to have that conversation. So that's on my agenda for tomorrow, and just hanging out with family. It's been a good week. Next week is really shaping up to be some good stuff as well. I'm looking forward to it. I was at a meeting earlier this week that looked at some of the details about the new Rosemont mine, and just kind of who's a part of it and what the technology is and what it looks to do. Next Wednesday I have the guys from Hexagon on. They just acquired another small mining company. They're a local company here, so that's going to tie in. I'm looking forward to that. And then the notorious BBG. I feel like that is a trademark. I probably shouldn't. the notorious RBG, our Supreme Court Justice. I often give Ben Mueller Garcia a hard time. He's the notorious BBG. But we're not allowed to really say that because, it's probably trademarked. But he'll be in to talk economic development as well. But I love his view because it's not just market based, it's community based. And how we have a Tucson that is working for everybody. And then I know I'm giving some sneak previews. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I'm really excited. A friend of mine was in New York City for a Smart Cities Summit, looking at how technology affects cities and how cities can be smarter and use technology to be smarter. So I have her actually coming in on Monday to kick us off. So That's going to be good. Fresh from New York City. She gets back on Sunday and I have her in the studio on Monday. That's how we roll.
Perfect.
Here on the show. You know, jet lag, who needs that? Who needs that? So, Tucson, we are heading to a break. We're going to go visit some sponsors, hear some news, and then when you hear me again, it'll be with Ashley and Louie from Black Renaissance talking about Black artists in our Tucson and Arizona community as they're hosting a May series highlighting all of this just down the street at Hotel McCoy. I'm looking forward to that conversation. Tucson, come right on back. We'll see you on the other side.